You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, and I'm here with Greta Anderson and Max Ennis, and we are glad that you joined us to listen in.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Yes, hello and welcome. Hi, Ursula Rudenberg.
I didn't introduce myself.
No, you didn't. I'm sure everybody's wondering who that voice belongs to. We have a kind of fun show today. We want to share with you our behind-the-scenes impressions and experiences of our debut of the Local Talk reporters in representing Iowa on the national stage. Last Saturday, just a couple days ago, four of us KHOI reporters were in Des Moines covering the aftermath of the Democratic Party debate for Pacifica Radio Network. Pulling back the curtain and telling you what it's like to produce KHOI is something we do during membership drive time, which is always a lot of fun. And this is membership week. So if you have not taken out a KHOI membership yet, please give it some thought and join us. Basic membership is $55.
Speaking of looking behind the scenes, before we get to our adventures in Des Moines, we have a very special guest with us today here in the studio. We have started a new thread of focus on KHOI, which was started by our reporter Jim Werbo, which we call Hidden Treasures of the Community. And this person is that. Dennis Jones is our landlord. And we are very pleased that we've been able to convince him to step out of the background for a few minutes and take just a little bit of time out of his busy schedule to be on the air with us. Welcome, Dennis Jones.
Thank you.
Dennis, we've known each other now for almost 3 years, or a little more than 3 years. You had only recently bought the building when we talked to you about moving in.
Yes. The previous tenant was a dry cleaner, which the building was actually built for. Way back in 1925. And following that, I bought the building, and the cleaning establishment that was there at the time moved on, and it was vacant. And one Saturday morning, Ursula was peering at the window, and we became acquainted.
And you and your wife were on a scaffold, as I remember, painting,
yes.
Doing something on the ceiling of the building.
I think it was on coat number 3 or 4, something like that.
Dennis, is this your first commercial building?
Yes, yes. This is the only one that we've ventured into.
Tell us about buying the Pantorium. What motivated you to do that?
Well, I've been looking for a place that our local bicycle club could re-energize ourselves and sell used bicycles like we had done before for several years. And the club had kind of petered out a little bit, and we were looking for a spot. I have materials in my basement and places. Friends' basement and garage were overrun, and so we were looking for a spot. And this building had potential for both rent and income that way. Was a beautiful building, or at least I thought it was. And so it just kind of intrigued me at a time when I was ready to invest a little bit of money.
So you're saying that the bicycle club was really a major motivation for buying the building?
Well, it was a motivation. I'm not sure that it was a strongest motivation.
Uh-huh.
Probably looking at investing and planning ahead towards retirement and something I could work on was actually a little more of a motivation.
Uh-huh. And I've always gotten a very strong sense from you just that the building's presence itself was something that inspired your interest, that you liked the historical aspect of it and kind of just the beauty of this building.
Yeah, and some of that came about after I bought it. I learned shortly after that the building was actually part of the long-term plan for the Ames Historical Society. They had it in their vision that they might expand here into the building for a display area. Actually, it kind of surprised me, but it was intriguing. And in that process, I got a hold of a copy of the set of the plans that they had. And I learned, as I looked at the plans, I recognized the drawing and the drafting style that was on the plans and did some further research. I used to work at Iowa State University in the Agricultural Engineering Building, Davidson Hall, and I recognized that the plans had been drawn by the same person or the same firm. And so I did some further research, and Alan Holmes Kimball was the architect involved, And there's a history back there that he designed the reconstruction of Davidson Hall back in roughly the 30s, I believe. And he also designed this building along with several other structures around town.
So the Pantorium really is historically significant in terms of architects that were in this community.
Yeah, and it also shows up on the study that the historical architectural historian Will Page did of the downtown buildings. And it represents a style or a going away from the Victorian style of the old buildings to ones where you have the glass front, transom windows, the kickboard area out front that was all part of or consistent with the facade program that the City of Ames is trying to put forth as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really a revelation. This building was, I don't know, I think the word is neglected for many years. I grew up in this town bringing my dry cleaning here and kind of assuming that this building wouldn't last too long because it was in pretty bad condition. And being in the building now and seeing the work you're doing here has really been a revelation because it's a really very beautiful building and very solidly built.
Yes, it is real well built. Mm-hmm. Terrazzo floors, concrete foundation, lots of things that aren't present in a lot of the downtown buildings around here, or at least several of them don't have that kind of a luxury. The basement, 17-inch thick concrete walls, elaborate things, the structural floor system between it, and so on.
The fur vault in the basement?
Yes, yes.
There is a fur vault in the basement. Which you said used to be actually the coal chute, right, or the coal room.
It looked like it was the original coal mm-hmm. room for the building, and then at some time or other it changed the furnace probably to oil. Mm-hmm. And at that time, then they blocked that wall off, and there's a big steel, looks like a bank vault door.
It does, yes. Into it's kind of fancy.
And our understanding is that was where, in older days, people that would have furs and valuables that they need to keep in a secure area and also keep free of moths and so on. That way would bring them to the dry cleaner and store them over the winter mm-hmm. or I guess maybe over the summer.
It's interesting to think that there were enough people in Ames with fur coats that it warranted a fur vault. It's
yeah.
interesting.
Well, now, I guess we don't have a history of knowing if that paid off or not, but certainly the improvement was there.
When we moved into the building, the first thing that everybody said to us all the time was, "You're not taking that sign down, are you?" And so this is just to say, no, the sign is here to stay. In fact, one of these days we're going to make sure it gets lit up again.
Yes.
But when I was young, I always assumed that this was a dry cleaning building in an old movie theater because it had this ostentatious neon sign on the front that said Pantorium, which I thought sounded kind of grandiose. But apparently the operative word in that is pant. And, in fact, a pantorium is a dry cleaner's.
Right. Apparently it was a word developed somewhere in the teens or 20s or thereabouts. And it derives from the word pants or a Latin word, actually. And of the pants, I think, is
the
term that that has. But it apparently was a commercial brand name or mm-hmm. or business name that a firm used associated with that. There are Pantoriums around the country, although as you Google and search them, there are very few and far between.
Yeah.
Most of them, of course, gone out of business, but was there. Even in my hometown of Atlantic, I found a 1915 article that talked about the Atlantic's best Pantorium.
Uh-huh.
Which was clearly named a dry cleaner's. It wasn't identified as a Pantorium in the name, mm-hmm. but the Pantorium was the function that it mm-hmm. that it achieved.
Well, and we still do have people coming in with their laundry. It's petering out bit by bit, and then we have people coming looking for their laundry too. So slowly but surely, the past fades away. Did you ever think that you would have a radio station in your building?
No, we hadn't really thought too much about about what her tenant would be.
We
saw this as a viable area. The downtown is growing and becoming more viable down here. So we had faith that there would be somebody that would be interested in it. And I had heard I'm a member of a Kiwanis Club, and Roger Parmeter had actually given us a program about a year earlier. And the morning that you introduced yourself to us, it kind of all connected.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, I think, from all of us for not only letting us have this beautiful home, and it has made all the difference in the world, but also just for being the kind of landlord you are. I mean, I can't think of one person that just doesn't love it when you walk into the building, you know. And
that feels good, too.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great to be your tenant, and you've been just a wonderful landlord. Thank you. I just wanted to mention real briefly, you are actually a chief of operations at the Animal Disease Laboratory. Is that correct?
Actually, I'm phasing into retirement, so my replacement has now started out there. And I'm trying to do some training for him and so on. But, yeah, I was the chief facility engineer at the National Animal Disease Center, National Centers for Animal Health.
Even though in our world, you being our landlord is really what makes you the biggest treasure in the world, I have a feeling that the real contribution you've made lies much more in that area in your career at the laboratory. And you were before that at Iowa State, right?
Yeah, it's been a number of years ago. At Iowa State, though. So
can we get you to come back sometime after you've retired to talk about give us some understanding of what's happening at the Animal Disease Laboratory?
And oh, certainly. And we could arrange for the director or other folks out there that would be glad to tell the community more about what goes on out there.
Okay.
We don't get asked very often, and it's nice to share what progress we make out there.
Yeah, and it's actually a pretty significant part of our community.
It is now.
It'd be nice to kind of pull that into the awareness here at the station.
Yeah, in the last 10 years, the government's made roughly $500 million worth of investment in the facilities out there. So it's a big facility now.
Uh-huh. How long were you working there?
I'll finish out 24 years this spring.
24 years.
Yeah.
So it's... can you just share maybe one thing about your understanding of it as an institution?
Well, they do applied research, so they're really looking at trying to solve disease problems in livestock and significantly important diseases to livestock as well. And then they were also heavily involved in the avian influenza outbreak, determining what the patterns are with that, diagnosis of those, and helping to develop strategies.
Okay. So. Well, thank you, Dennis. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I really appreciate the work you've done to make this building increasingly beautiful for us.
Well, thank you.
And the spirit within which you do it.
Yeah.
Is.
And you've been great tenants, and we want to keep that going as well. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we are in our Fun Drive Week, and that was Dennis Jones, our landlord, who also is the, I think the correct word is Chief of Operations at the Animal Disease Laboratory. And we are asking you to kind of be with us today, not only as a listener, but as considering to become part of the community that supports KHOI. Our basic membership is $55. We also appreciate it when you can take out a $100 membership or consider being one of what we call our 500 families who give more than $250 and create the foundation for KHOI's financial stability. So keep that in mind, and let's keep talking. Let's talk about Des Moines.
Well, I just wanted to say also that, you know, Dennis just mentioned that we are a good tenant. That means that we pay our bills.
That's right. We do pay our bills.
And we want to keep doing that. And our bills are not insignificant. And so please think about that when you listen to the radio. We are all volunteers, but we are do have bills nonetheless, and we need your support for that. So, you know, at the end of every Local Talk show, we remind you that Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And you might wonder what that really means. What we describe next might give you a bit of an idea.
To cut to the chase, the voices of our reporters went out to live to dozens of stations around the country who decided to air in a Los Angeles-produced post-debate show after the Democratic debate this past Saturday evening in Des Moines. KHOI Community Radio is part of a network of community radio stations called the Pacifica Radio Network. That is how we are able to offer you such quality shows, for instance, Letters in Politics with Mitch Jezerik at 5 p.m. from Monday through Thursday. Still, as we keep reminding you this week, most community radio is run on a shoestring budget. So, of course, the Los Angeles producer of the post-debate wrap-up show could not afford to fly anyone out to Des Moines to cover the event. Instead, he reached out to our trained amateurs here at KHOI. Our excellent technical crew jumped into action and found us an inexpensive tool we could use with our smartphones to both transmit our live interviews to the Los Angeles station, KPFK, and to hear what was going on live in their studio. Then, on Saturday, four of us packed up and headed down to Drake University, where the debate was going to take place, to receive our reporter credentials. Different buildings had different accommodations for reporters. There was the file room and the spin room. Station manager Ursula Rudenberg and youth reporter Max Ennis, myself, were assigned to the file room, where they snagged a seat next to the Daily Show people, and Greta Anderson and Gail Seiler were assigned to the spin room, where campaign representatives came after the debate to spin their version of the debate story. We'll have clips of those interviews we did.
Okay, so any questions, audience? it was quite an experience for all of us, I think. There was quite a bit of excitement in the car as we drove down, first to get our press credentials, official tag that hung around our neck, and then again a few hours later when we went down to do the actual reporting.
I think one of the things that was really interesting for me was that I had never actually been in a reporting situation that was so structured, controlled plan as to who went where. And so it really gave our team an opportunity to see how press management occurs. And there was this division of buildings. The actual press room was in a different building, which was in a different building from what they called the spin room, which was where you and Gail were, where you had much more access to the candidates, or at least to their campaign managers. And then there was the venue itself. And then there was, when we went down there earlier, there was a lot of the area was blocked off because they said they were sweeping the area because of Hillary Clinton being the wife of an ex-president. And every area had its own pass and its own way of working. And it was very interesting to see how everybody else seemed to, you know how to do all this because they were more experienced reporters than we were. But for us, it was really our first time, and now we're veterans.
Yes, we're trained now in this arena, and we're going to go back.
Yeah. I have to say that as the manager of KHOI, I was incredibly impressed by the quality of work that all of our reporters did. Max is a high school student, and the rest of us are older, but we're all novices. And everybody just really rose to the occasion, and I think we really did a stellar job. And the folks in Los Angeles were extremely happy with the reporting. They thought that Iowa had represented itself extremely well, and we had strong interviews. We were also very lucky. We managed to get access to people that were worth listening to on the air. Why don't you tell the story about Mr. Cornell West?
So Mr. Cornell West, for those of you that don't know, is a philosopher, intellectual, who is helping Senator Sanders in his run for president. We kind of almost half-joked, oh, we could get Cornell West for an interview for this. Ursula and I were outside of the spin room. We had an interview lined up for 10:20. That was the slot we had on air. So we go to the exit of the debate hall. Everyone's coming out. And I spot Cornell West coming out of the hall. And he doesn't have any security. He's just walking with his daughter and, I believe, a manager.
And this is what really impressed me. Max, how old are you, Max?
I'm 18.
Max is an 18-year-old high school student. And when Cornel West walked out of that exit in a crowd, Max did not miss a beat. He went straight for him, and I thought, wow, that's very impressive. You absolutely recognized him the minute you saw him. Very impressive.
No, and so we ask him for an interview. We tell him we're from Pacifica Radio. He agrees. He's happy to do it at that moment. It's like 10:05, and we're like, can you wait 15 minutes? He tells us, okay, we have to go to the Varsity Theater where a Sanders rally is being held. And we had planned to go there
right,
regardless, because that's where the pre-staged interview we had was set up.
But this was the nightmare that all of us had, was that we had been told we would be on the air in Los Angeles, or with the national broadcast at certain times. And our job was to convince political candidates and their managers and, you know, personalities like Mr. West to stand around and wait until the broadcast time we had been assigned, which is kind of like an impossibility.
Yeah, I think most of the I think we were the only ones doing live, you know, media.
Yes, that's
everybody
right.
else was recording interviews and to play later at their, you know, specific time.
Right.
We were doing it live.
So all of a sudden, we're telling Mr. West he's supposed to stand around for 10 minutes. And so, of course, that didn't happen.
So we run to the Varsity Theater. Ursula and I, like, our hair's flying back. We're just, like, sprinting down this road in the Drake University neighborhood.
And while we're running down, the folks in Los Angeles are telling us, you've got 8 minutes till airtime. You know, you got to have something for us in 8 minutes. And we're running down the road going, we have nothing.
And so we see Cornell in the foyer of the theater, like where they sell popcorn, et cetera. And we ask him, okay, are you ready for your interview? He's like, no, not right now. I got to make some comments. I have to make comments for Bernie. And we freak out at that point. It's like 7:18. We are on air very soon. I looked at Ursula and I say, okay, let's try and get Bernie. He's coming our way, trying to get out.
Yeah, we're in the theater, and it's like an old movie theater. And so it's just like a big room, kind of like an old movie, and there's hundreds of people in there. And Cornell's telling us he's going to go up on that stage, talk to all those people, and Bernie is on that stage, right?
Yes.
Well, Bernie Sanders.
So he starts coming off the stage. He's walking towards us, and Ursula and I try and meet him. I say, Senator Sanders, can we have a quick interview? We're from Pacifica Radio.
And meanwhile, he's shaking like a million hands.
And not right now.
Now.
And
and he's got this big bodyguard who's kind of like saying, excuse me, very, very nice bodyguard, I have to say.
Their bodyguards were very, very,
very nice.
Polite.
But I ended up
being trapped behind the line of bodyguards. They wouldn't let me through past Senator Sanders. So I'm freaking out. It's 7:19. I can't find Ursula. And so I see the aisle on the other side of the theater's moving faster, so I run across the chairs. One of my legs gets stuck between the seat and the back of the movie chair, so I pull it off. My shoe falls off, so I run into the foyer. No one's there. I can't find Ursula. I run out the front door, and Ursula's standing there with Cornel West, and we're starting an interview.
Right.
We had a pretty good interview with him.
Oh, it was fabulous. After the interview, we were lucky. We got Cornel West to do a great interview. And at the end of the interview, Max says to me, I need to go find my shoe. And I look down, and he's got one shoe off. He's like standing there in his socks.
Yeah, that was Max's Cinderella moment.
Max's Cinderella moment.
Let's listen to that interview.
I just encourage each and every one of the people out there, get a chance to know who he is. He's a brother of great integrity, of magnificent vision, and analysis from the vantage point of precious, poor, and working people.
Did it take any convincing to get you to support Mr. Sanders, or did you see that from the beginning?
Oh, no, from the very beginning. Absolutely. I followed him for 35, 40 years. indeed.
So you're going to be representing him tomorrow in Ames. What are you going to say at that meeting?
Well, I'll be talking about the ways in which Martin Luther King Jr. and Helen Keller and Albert Einstein and John Dewey were all great democratic socialists. They were as American as cherry pie. They were concerned about poor people and working people and critical of the oligarchs and plutocrats who have disproportionate amount of power and influence then and now. Bernie Sanders is in that tradition.
How do you think he did tonight?
I thought he did a good job.
Mr. West, what do you see as the key points to victory for Mr. Sanders?
He's got to be able to keep the young people on the fire. He's got to bring in black folk. He's got to bring in brown folk. He's got to keep the older folk within the group. And we've got to see the Clinton machine run out of gas.
So when you talk about the Clinton machine, that was discussed a lot in the debate. How are you going to see your participation in the campaign and Bernie's own rhetoric focus the American consciousness on this campaign finance reform?
I think when you're talking about Bernie Sanders, you're talking about a level of integrity, truth-telling, and witness-bearing. So we don't have any tricks. We don't have any gimmicks. It's just a matter of having enough trust in the capacity of everyday people to see what's going on.
And the cheering you're hearing is burning coming out of the room. Okay, we're going to follow Mr. West and see if we can leap. He can lead us to Bernie.
And Ursula, what's the scene there? Is it a madhouse?
Yes, it's a mob scene, and Bernie has just come out of the building. We're standing out on the street, and yes, there's a mob scene. There's several hundred people here waving signs. You can hear them cheering.
Are you going to try to get to Bernie?
He's already said he won't talk to us anymore, so I think he's very busy right now.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us, Ursula Rudenberg from outside in Iowa. This is the first of our reports that we'll bring, and we'll come back to you a little later in the broadcast. I'm Susie Wiseman. You're listening to Pacifica National Radio's two-hour special on the second Democratic debate.
And 2 hours is a lot of time to fill. It was, we were supposed to be providing content all the way up to the end of that 2 hours. And, you know, things were just clearing out there down in Des Moines. So, a lot of our, I think their schedule just had to change after a while. So anyway, you're listening to Local Talk, on KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to us on Pledge Week, which is when we try to encourage you to show your support of this fine news organization and other types of music organization and community organization.
No, it's a national news organization.
It is now a national news organization.
Very pleased to be able to represent Iowa so proudly during this time of focus on Iowa. And have community radio and on-the-ground reporting, you know, be part of the process of reporting from Iowa.
Yeah, and we really need to do a shout-out to Eric Weber for helping us get that technology that allowed us to transmit a live interview live over the air to Los Angeles and for them to air it and for us to hear what they were saying to us.
Yes.
I mean, it was just it was cool.
It was very good. And okay, what do we have next, Greta?
It was a different kind of mob scene over in the spin room. We did not have hundreds of people in the spin room. It was a smallish room where, you know, a few reporters kind of hung out during the debate, listening, watching it on television. You know, they would mute the television during the commercials. And sometimes you'd hear reporters in these studios doing their live thing over the air. You know, they were all always dressed up in a single color pantsuit or a dress suit and speaking, you know, what they thought was the most important thing that had gone on in the debate so far. So that was kind of interesting. Gail and I were sitting, taking notes scrupulously on the debate, trying to figure out exactly what we wanted to say, what we wanted to ask. It was very exciting, you know. The questions you ask make a big difference. And we were kind of instructed to allow by our
producer, Alan Minsky,
to allow the campaigns to say their thing first and do their spin. And so we had plenty of opportunity to hear what their spin was because, of course, we weren't set up until 10:40. We were scheduled to go on at 10:40, and by that time, the spinners had been spinning. And and in fact, you know, the crowd of reporters that descended upon Sanders surrogate, who was right next to me, Tad Devine, is the communications.
What exactly is a surrogate?
Well, surrogate is means that they represent the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There's a campaign manager, and then there's a senior advisor to the campaign, and so on. There's just different levels. So the senior advisor to the campaign and a communications consultant, oh, he was just going rapid fire, stating his, you know, view of how Sanders' performance had been, and the reporters were just crowded around him. It was like a feeding frenzy. It really was. It was like sharks on a big piece of meat. And
were you and Gail intimidated by this?
Well, you know, it was kind of hard again to know what I was going to do because I had
because you'd never done this before.
Yeah, and I had a scheduled time to have a guest. It was to be a Sanders campaign guest, and frankly, for about 5 or 10 minutes, I just stood completely still in the midst of this sea of predation and just kind of watched and looked and just stood still. And then lo and behold, before I knew it, there was somebody standing pretty close next to me. And it was not the senior advisor to the Sanders campaign. It was the manager of the Sanders campaign.
And how could you tell it was the manager?
Oh, they had signs. They had people behind them carrying signs. That was very nice. And in fact, I had talked to somebody ahead of time who, you know, said, "Do you do this a lot?" And he said, "Yeah, you know." And so what is this going to be like, you know, after the debate when people come? And he said, "Well, there'll be people with signs." And lo and behold, there they are. And he said, "Yeah, it'll be kind of a feeding frenzy and you just got to elbow your way in." And so anyway. Jeff Weaver was there. Sanders campaign manager. And at that point, I contacted HQ over in Los Angeles and said, "I've got an interview here." And it took them several minutes to get around to being ready for me. And by that time, we had a few sharks coming into my zone wanting to talk to Mr. Weaver. And so I kind of had to, you know, I let them know that this was a live piece. He did respect the Pacifica Radio Network and, you know, it was clear he was going to make time for us. And I had great eye contact with him. And, you know, when the others came in, I kind of had to say, you know,
this
is mine. Yes, this is a live deal. So, you know. Be ready to just back off. And they did so, and I was very, very grateful for that. So we'll listen now to the Jeff Weaver interview.
Breaking news, we have Jeff Weaver with our reporter Greta in Iowa. Jeff Weaver is Bernie Sanders' campaign manager. It's a real coup. Jeff Weaver, are you there?
Jeff Weaver is ready to talk to me, and I'm very happy that others around me are acceding to our live broadcast. So thank you, both of you. Jeff, you've been saying that the campaign has been saying that Bernie dominated the debate. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think what you saw in case after case is that the issues that Senator Sanders is raising, not only in this debate but in this election, are really the dominant issues that everybody is talking about. I think if you watch the debate tape, the number of times other candidates on the stage said, "I agree with Senator Sanders," it would be quite a few. So we're talking about the issues that are on the minds of voters, the need to deal with the rigged economy and the corrupt political system that upholds it.
At times, it seemed almost that the Sanders-O'Malley team was double-teaming Hillary Clinton. And I'm wondering, was there a sense maybe that you might have lost some voters to O'Malley, given the similarities in their perspective?
Well, I mean, I think if you just look at the dynamics of the election, I think we're doing quite well with voters. And I think Senator Sanders had such a dominant performance tonight. I'm not really concerned about that.
On what issues do you think Sanders was able to connect with voters most?
Well, I think the clear distinctions he drew on his not only his ability but his willingness to take on Wall Street and the billionaire class, I think really sets him apart. I think he also had an extremely strong performance in terms of foreign policy. I think he demonstrated not only the judgment but the willingness to defend this country in a reasonable way and to take on ISIS and the other threats facing America.
Yes, you were saying that he managed to dominate that discussion by making the Iraq War the issue rather than anything that would be in Hillary's expertise.
Well, look, clearly The Iraq War, which is one of the major foreign policy blunders of in modern American history, created the instability and the opening for ISIS to develop and flourish in Iraq and in Iraq. So there's no doubt about it that vote on the Iraq War was a pivotal in sort of the rise of ISIS.
I think we might have lost connection. We still got it? Okay.
We're here. We're listening to you.
Okay.
We're with
all
rapt
right.
attention.
My phone was talking to me. Okay. Now, everybody's talking about the moment where he compared himself to Eisenhower, that great socialist, because Eisenhower had a 90% tax rate at the highest level. There were also some other interesting moments where he said that he was more conservative than Hillary in terms of regime change. He also was insisting that it's not a radical idea to have a 40-hour work week pay your bills. So was this a conscious effort on your part to sort of reach out to moderates and say, hey, Bernie is not as radical and leftist as people cast him as?
Well, I think he laid out his agenda, I think, which is a common-sense agenda for America. I think if you look at the polling on issue after issue, the American people, by and large, agree with Senator Sanders' views on these issues. We're obviously constantly reaching out to people, but, this is an election, and it's a contest of ideas, and I think we had a contrast with other candidates on the stage. We certainly tried to lay out that contrast so that, voters, I think, appreciate a respectful contrast between candidates in terms of giving them the best ability to make a decision about who to vote for.
Well, just to follow up on that, people were saying that the options of the Sanders campaign was to continue to reach out to its base or start to cherry-pick voters who are now supporting Hillary, and that would mean proving that you're electable, proving that you have an appeal in the moderate direction. So yeah. Was that a conscious campaign strategy?
We consider our base to be 99% of the American population, so we are always reaching out to our base.
Okay, thanks. Susie, did you have something you wanted to ask?
Well, I was just I was going to comment when he said that Eisenhower had the 90% tax rate. I think it was O'Malley, but it may have been Bernie who also said, well, under Reagan, it was 70%. So, he was essentially saying that they were to the left, far to the left of the status quo.
That's right. And that's one of those cases when the two men were double teaming or kind of reinforcing each other's points.
Okay, well, Greta, we want to thank you so much for joining us from the Spin Room in Iowa, and we're going to go back to our in-studio guest, Robert Brenner.
Okay, and how is that for spin, that the Sanders base is 99% of the American public, or is it 99.9%?
It's an interesting thing just alone that they call the room the Spin Room. It's kind of like a commentary upon our own political process from within. It's very interesting.
I know.
Use of language.
But speaking of spin, I really got a insight into the differences maybe between commercial news outlets and our own when I saw the Des Moines Register coverage of the debate. And they, all along, I've been noticing and seeing that the commercial coverage of the race is really as a horse race. And, the person I was speaking with, Jeff Weaver of the Sanders campaign, he was saying, look, these issues are dominating the conversation. Sanders made these issues the center point. And so that's a real huge difference. Over here, the front page article by Jennifer Jacobs, the lead political reporter for the Des Moines Register, said, quoted somebody, some undecided voter within the third paragraph, she quoted this person as saying, Clinton effectively won by withstanding attacks. And, what does that mean? It really means nothing. We talked about some really good issues at that Democratic debate. And I think that is what community radio can highlight.
That's the hallmark of community radio. That's our signature sound. We talk about the issues and the meaning behind the news, not just the horse race. And during election time, community radio shines particularly because we do really stand for the democratic principle that these elections are not about just competition. They're not entertainment. They're not even really spin. They really are about real issues, real people, And at the end of the day, you and I and everybody else we meet on the street will actually be affected by the election and the decisions that are made during election time. So this is democracy at work, and democracy cannot function without good communication. And that is why we have a free media in the United States. That's why we have the First Amendment. And that's why the founders of this country made sure that the media would be able to communicate on real issues. And it's very interesting. My father, Klaus, who actually gave a talk here last night to a full house, he grew up in Germany during the Third Reich. And I was curious about what it's like to grow up in a totalitarian regime. And he described how when he left Germany, he went to Switzerland in 1938, having grown up under Hitler. And I said to him, how could you tell that you were in a democracy once you were in Switzerland? How does one actually in daily life feel that one is in a democracy instead of an autocratic state? And he did not even think for 2 seconds. He just automatically, he said, the difference is that people can talk to each other. And I noticed that right away in Switzerland, is that people could talk about things. They could talk about politics, whereas in Germany they weren't able to. And I just thought, wow, that is it. That's the essence of democracy, the ability to discuss the political issues that affect our lives. And that's what community radio does. That's our mission. Our mission is not to just entertain or to turn things into a horse race so that you feel that you're kind of part of some sort of,
you can place your bets.
Theoretical action, right. Place your bets, hedge your bets, whatever you do during election time. Our goal is to actually help you understand what is going, you know, what are the issues that give substance to our life as an American democracy. And so, this is why we have community radio. That's why we stand behind it. And we are asking you to stand behind it and behind the activity of your fellow community people who are volunteering to really pursue this really elevated mission to build community through communication, to bring you the stories, to take the trouble to give a very intelligent interview. Congratulations, Greta. I know you were under tremendous pressure your first time under the circumstance, and you kept your head, and you did a substantive interview with the representative of the Bernie campaign. So we ask you as the listener to join this activity of substance, of, elevated interests, and you can be part of this. You can come and work with us. You can come and get your own press pass, and we'll take you down to Des Moines.
You have to put in your dues, though, first.
Yeah. We're going to be covering the caucuses nationally.
That's true.
Come on down, get training, and help us report on the caucuses.
We're asking you to put your money where your First Amendment rights are.
That's right. But in the meantime, just join us by taking out a membership, $55. Give us a call at 515-292-2878. Or you can go to khoifm.org, and there's a donate button there. So, Greta, what's next? Tell us what else happened in the spin room.
Well, the Hillary Clinton campaign people were not nearly as well identified as the Sanders campaign people. Gail Seiler, my cohort on Saturday night, was looking around for Clinton people, couldn't find them. They were sort of incognito. And so I just had to go. We were going around and listening in to other people's conversations and interviews, because the more experienced reporters, of course, know who some of these people are. And sure enough, I listened into one, and I heard the pronoun she being used a lot, and I thought,
And sounds like Hillary.
I talked to a press person who was next to me, who didn't have a microphone, wasn't holding a microphone, and I just sort of whispered in her ear, who is this? And she said, oh, it's Robbie Mook, the campaign director for the Hillary campaign. And
so reporters did help each other in the spin.
Yeah,
room.
Yeah.
That's nice to know.
And you could really see that, if you made a life of this reporting, you would definitely build friendships across the country, with your fellow people. I could see there was a kind of a collegiality. The whole elbowing your way in thing, it wasn't that bad. So,
And by the way, in the big press room, we were sitting next to The Daily Show.
Oh,
and so we bonded with The Daily Show.
Yeah. And he came by later and to the spin room.
Anyway, go on.
So we finally identified this person and kind of kept our eye on him throughout. We, again, needed to match the right time slot. And actually, by the time I was finishing up my Sanders interview, and that was what the confusion was about, losing signal on my phone, I thought, because Gail suddenly was working with her phone. She was talking to our producer, Alan Minsky, about her Clinton interview. They were wanting to do that pretty soon, right after mine. So that was my confusion. I didn't know whether my phone was still working. And So I was in a euphoria after finishing that interview and just had to experience that for a couple minutes. And then all of a sudden I realized Gail was gone and we had agreed to help each other out with holding all of our equipment while we were doing interviews. And I was like, oh, but luckily Gail was wearing a red vest, so I could find her pretty quickly. And she was indeed right beside Robbie Mook, the Clinton campaign manager, and she was about to start the interview. So let's listen to her work. She did very well.
I'm Susie Wiseman. This is the Pacifica National Broadcast. We are very fortunate to have Gail right now in Iowa with a representative from the Clinton campaign. Gail, are you there?
I am here.
All right.
Ready to go. Okay, I'm here with Robbie Mook, the campaign manager for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Great. I know it's an exciting night. So what would you say that Secretary Clinton's strongest moment was?
Well, I actually think what was strongest about her performance in this debate was how she focused squarely throughout the entire 2 hours on how she's going to help make life better for the middle class in this country, how she's going to keep our families secure, defeat ISIL, but also how she's going to get wages rising again for the middle class, how she's going to help them deal with things like the rising cost of health insurance, daycare, and college tuition.
Do you think there was a moment that she might want to take back? There's always those moments when you say, I want to take that back. Were there any?
No, I think, in fact, I think she wanted more time to talk about issues like healthcare premiums and how we bring those costs down, how we bring down the cost of prescription drugs. So I think we could have talked about that stuff all night.
It seems like about the first half hour was focused on foreign policy, particularly around the events in Paris. And it seemed like she was that Secretary Clinton was being positioned as somehow linking what was happening now with terrorism and so on with the Iraq War and with actions that fell on her shoulders. How do you think she handled that? And do you think it ended up supporting her tonight, or that focus did it hurt her?
Well, the voters are looking to nominate the next commander-in-chief, and I think by all accounts she passed that test with flying colors. The core question here is how we keep middle-class families safe, and she had the clearest, toughest plan to defeat ISIL, and obviously brings an incredible depth of experience. She talked about how she was in the Situation Room, counseled the president to go after bin Laden. So I think her experience and her plan really spoke for themselves.
Do you think that she was thinking of debating the Republicans tonight, or was she focused on the two other candidates on the stage with her?
Well, the differences with the Republicans are significant, and she made that clear. But I think it's also significant that she was the only candidate on that stage who made a pledge not to raise taxes on the middle class in this country. And so I think that's an important distinction.
Senator Sanders and Governor O'Malley, seemed like they were trying to paint Secretary Clinton as a little more conservative and holding back on minimum wage and maybe also on Wall Street reform. How do you think that went?
Well, there were differences on these issues. What Secretary Clinton made clear is that she supports raising the minimum wage. The core focus of this campaign is how to get wages rising for the middle class. I think she also talked about how her Wall Street plan is the toughest of any of them, that the focus here has to not be on one particular area of this issue, but how we prevent another crash from happening. And as she explained, the other candidate's plans may not have prevented what happened in 2008, and that's really the key here.
Did she have enough opportunities to talk about the fact that if elected, she would be the first woman president?
Well, that is true. I would also argue she'll be the most qualified person to ever step into the Oval Office. Look, it's a really important part of this campaign, and it's something that we're really excited about, and it's long overdue.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
And Gail, thank you so much for that coup of an interview with the representative from the Clinton campaign.
Coup.
You're listening to Pacifica National Radio's special broadcast. We're having a two-hour program on the debate that took place tonight in Iowa.
Yep, we were a counting coup there. Des Moines, Drake University in Des Moines.
Coup, that is interesting language.
Yep. So
so they liked us out there. And again, to explain, what we're listening to is that Pacifica Radio Network did a national broadcast, which was a follow-up of the debate. We actually were not able to air the debate because CBS Radio and TV bought an exclusive to the debate, which is a new development in this election year, that actually one network is able to buy an exclusive. So that's actually a little bit cause for concern. But nonetheless, we were not allowed to air the debate. And so we were basically speaking with people after the debate. And we were in Des Moines in the media areas. And Max and I were out on the street running around trying to get the word on the street. And Gail and Greta were our reporters who were in the spin room, which is the area where the representatives of the campaigns went after the debate. And we were filing reports live on the air nationally via cell phone to the anchors of the show, who were located at KPFK Radio in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And we have that wonderful relationship with Pacifica Radio Network, especially because of you, Ursula, being a coordinator, nationwide coordinator.
Full disclosure, I work for Pacifica Radio.
And that's one of the reasons I think that this station was able to spring into full realization so quickly and so professionally. You knew the good shows that were out there on Pacifica. You put them on our airwaves and, you know, we've been enjoying them ever since.
And lucky for Pacifica, I just happened to be from Iowa. And so Iowa being a very important part of the presidential election process, it's a real boon for Pacifica Radio because during election period, Pacifica really prides itself on shining in giving on-the-ground very nuanced reporting. So they were very happy to know that they had a station in Iowa that would cooperate with them.
That's right. And as we mentioned earlier, we hope to be doing this again as the caucus season heats up and caucus day arrives.
That's right.
So
support your community radio station, please. This is membership drive.
We don't want Ursula to have to be thinking about paying bills when we have to think about doing this quality reporting.
That's right. That's right. So we have a few minutes left. Bring us around to the end of this spin room process, Greta.
Well, by this time, it was clearing out a bit. And then arriving on the scene was Martin O'Malley himself. So we were told to kind of expect him to show up. As the person furthest behind in the polls, he really needed to get some media time in there. So most of the TV stations that had cameras were around him, filming him simultaneously with his comments. And I was very interested to interview O'Malley's campaign, and we didn't hope to get into that fray, but we found the campaign manager and we interviewed him. We thought O'Malley had a pretty good performance during the debate and wanted to call that out and see what the campaign was saying about it. So we were able to do that. And that was followed by, with very few people in the room, Gail saw the representative from District 35 in Des Moines. His name is Abdul Samad, Representative Abdul Samad, the only Muslim in the Iowa House, and an African American. And she was able to talk to him about some of the social issues that were on display at the debate. And you know, what he said was comes back to this talk about the issues. You know, he said, "I just think the debate was awesome. This debate shows why we need a Democratic president." You know, mm-hmm. Because really, if you parse all these differences and the horse race, you lose sight of the fact that these are such important issues. They're being foregrounded. Mm-hmm. They're being discussed in a way that I don't think was happening 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We are running out of time, so let's go out with. Can we go out with this interview?
Oh, we don't have time for the whole thing. No.
Okay. All right. So we will. Should we close out the show then? We have just a few minutes left. We have 4 minutes. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Greta Anderson, and we've been speaking about our foray into our first national broadcast as a media organization, where we covered the aftermath of the Democratic debate. And this is also Pledge Drive Week, so please consider taking out a membership to KHOI. And $55 basic membership, $100 if you want to show your appreciation for KHOI. And Greta, are we going to go out with some of this interview?
Yeah, I think we should go out with the number five. Nadia Abdel-Azim
right
is
now, who is in Iowa, and she has an African American legislator from Iowa with her. Gail, are you there listening to us?
Yes, I am, and we're ready to go.
Good.
Okay, I'm here with Akeo Abdul-Samad. He's the state representative from District 35 in Iowa, which is in the city of Des Moines, and he's also chair of the Iowa Black Caucus.
Democratic
Black Caucus. Okay. So I'm going to ask you first just your general impression of the debate tonight and how the candidates address the issues that you think are of most concern to your constituents.
First, let me say that the debate was awesome. And I think the debate showed the public why we need a Democratic president. Now, we have three of the most qualified and awesome individuals. That's the first thing. The other thing is, of course, being a Muslim and being the only Muslim in the House of Representatives, the Islamic question was very important to me, you know, because I didn't want to see any of the candidates, you know, perpetuate Islamophobia. You know, that was the thing, as the other party does. The other question and issues was education, you know, because it's imperative that we deal and address, you know, the debt that students are going into, and that we free our colleges up to be able to educate, you know, our young people, you know, instead of strapping them with financial burden, you know. And, of course, the issue of us losing lives. We have a